Welcome, and let's First Talk Compliance. I'm Catherine Short, Partnership Marketing Manager at First Healthcare Compliance. Thanks for tuning in. You can follow First Healthcare Compliance on Twitter at FirstHCC or on Facebook and Instagram at First Healthcare Compliance or hashtag First Talk Compliance. On today's episode, I'm talking to Trey Scott, attorney at Kennedy Attorneys and Counselors at Law, a health law boutique in Dallas, Texas, about Good with God, an overview of Stark, Anti-Kickback, and False Claims Act. We will discuss these matters, such as definitions, safe harbors, and the understanding of penalties for violations and exceptions and safe harbors. Trey received his Bachelor of Science and MBA degrees from Texas Tech University at Lubbock. Trey received his JD degree from Texas Wesleyan University School of Law in 2012. He also interned with the 106th District Court of Texas in La Mesa, Texas in 2010. In private practice, he has worked with medical practitioners on meaningful use appeals, matters involving the National Practitioner Data Bank, Medicare-Medicaid investigations, wage and hour lawsuits, contract litigation, payer post-payment audits and appeals, government surveys, appeals, and compliance. Mr. Scott is licensed in Texas and currently focuses his practice on health law and healthcare regulatory compliance, as well as administrative law and civil litigation. Since joining Kennedy in 2015, he has assisted clients in civil and administrative litigation, payment and reimbursement appeals, before professional licensing boards, regulatory licensure filings and compliance, fraud and abuse defense, employment law, transactional issues, and other provider matters. So Trey, welcome to First Talk Compliance. Thanks for joining me.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to jump on and talk with you about this very complicated subject.
Yes, I'm sure as a health law attorney, you have some experience with fraud and abuse and waste. Can you tell me a little bit more about what each of those is, what fraud is, for example?
Now, fraud, Medicare fraud involves knowingly submitting or causing to be submitted false claims or making representations of fact to obtain a federal health care payment for which no entitlement would otherwise exist. Knowingly soliciting, receiving, offering, and or paying remuneration to induce or reward referrals for items or services reimbursed by federal health care programs, or making prohibited referrals for certain designated health services. So there's a lot there, and there's a lot that could actually be fraud. Now, abuse is, I guess, if you're looking at things on a scale, there would be fraud is up at the top, then there's abuse in the middle, and then there's waste down at the bottom. Abuse is practices that directly or indirectly result in unnecessary cost to the Medicare program. An example of this is similar to billing for unnecessary medical services, charging excessively for services or supplies, misusing codes on a claim, such as upcoding or unbundling codes. And then you have waste, which waste is the overutilization of services or other practices. And they're generally not considered to be criminally negligent actions, but it is a result of the misuse of resources.
Now, what laws govern fraud and abuse?
There are actually several laws that govern fraud and abuse, and that's kind of where we went with the title. I'm not sure if you know, there's a band out there called the Old 97s. They're actually from Dallas, Texas, and they've been around for quite some time. And one of their songs off of their newest album is called Good with God. And over the course of the song, this guy is saying he's good with God. He has some problems. He has some sin, but he's pretty sure he's okay. Well, at the end of the song, he's finally just says, "Well, we'll essentially just have to wait and see if I'm okay." That's kind of how these laws go here. You don't want to end up in a situation where you just wait and see if these laws apply, and I'll get to that further whenever I talk about recommendations. But the first law out there is the False Claims Act, or the FCA, and the purpose of the FCA is to allegedly protect the federal government from being overcharged or sold substandard goods or services. Now, the FCA states that anyone that knowingly presents or causes to be presented a false or fraudulent claim for payment or approval is subject to a monetary penalty plus 3 times the amount of damages which the government sustains act of this person. So this can end up being very, very costly for a provider that submits a false claim. So essentially, if you're found to have violated the FCA, you can face up to, and these are 2016 figures. The 2018 figures, I apologize, I believe are actually higher. So we'll just go with this number because this is what CMS recently produced. If you submit a false claim and you were found to have violated the False Claims Act, you're facing a $21,563 penalty per claim. So essentially, if they found you violated the False Claims Act 3 times, then that's $21,000 plus per claim. So you're looking at a lot of money. And then you could be liable for treble damages to the government. So that's 3 times the amount. So it can get pretty expensive. The next law is one that everyone has probably heard about, and what you probably get asked a lot about on this show is the anti-kickback statute. And that the anti-kickback statute prohibits the knowing and willful solicitation, offer, payment, or acceptance of any remuneration, including any kickback, bribe, or rebate, directly or indirectly, overtly or covertly, in cash or kind, for referring an individual for a service or item covered by a federal health care program, or for purchasing, leasing, ordering, or arranging for or recommending the purchase, lease, or order of any good, facility, service, or item under a federal health care program. Now, that's a lot to take in.
I was just going to say, what if you boiled that down into like a few words, what would that be?
If you boiled it down into a few words, it's essentially the anti-kickback statute prohibits getting any sort of payment for referring patients for services. So okay. an example of that would be you have a childhood friend, and you are both in the healthcare practice. And you come to him and you're just like, hey, if you refer me 5 patients within the next month, I'll give you a watch. Well, unfortunately, that is a kickback because it is for the knowing and willful payment of getting a patient. So that is a kickback. And then finally, the last law governing all fraud and abuse is the Stark Law. Now, Stark is essentially the limitation on certain physician referrals. It essentially prevents a physician or immediate family member of a physician that has a financial relationship from making a referral to an entity that physician has a relationship with. So essentially, it's prohibiting self-referrals.
Okay.
And it also has some pretty stiff penalties. The penalties in it, if you're found to violate the Stark Law, then there's a fine of $23,863 for each service. And you can also be excluded from participation in the any federal health care program. So it's pretty steep.
Well, let's talk about kickback. So what is a kickback, Mort? Is food a kickback, as in lunches from Subway or Panera Bread? Is a Rolex a kickback? I mean, what exactly is a kickback if we talk more about it?
One thing that most physicians, healthcare providers deal with, they normally get free lunches from vendors. Now, as you know, there's no such thing as a free lunch, because the vendors are wanting something in return. They're wanting business, and so that somewhat creates a conflict of interest. Now,
right.
as far as lunch, nominal meals that are provided during a business meeting are not considered gifts. They're not considered remuneration normally. But I always have to say this caveat. I always have to say it depends. Your definition, my definition, other healthcare attorneys' definitions of what a kickback is, that really doesn't matter, because ultimately the only decision as to what a kickback is up to the Office of Inspector General and Department of Justice that are investigating anti-kickback matters. Their decision as to whether something meets a kickback, that's the decision that you go by. And unfortunately, there are cases out there where most of the cases out there that the Department of Justice and the Office of Inspector General list on their website, most of them involve millions of dollars in kickbacks and false claims. So yes, there's obviously that. But one thing that the Office of Inspector General does that we highly recommend is they have a portal for you to submit a request for an advisory opinion. This essentially allows you to ask the Office of Inspector General if what you are doing is okay, as long as our recommendation is, before you do it, you ask for the advisory opinion, because if you're letting the Office of Inspector General know, hey, this is what we're doing and we want to know if it's okay, you've kind of just put a target on your back. But if you do it beforehand, then that provides you a answer. And the advisory opinions, they have a search function, so you can go through there and search and find out what they've said in previous cases.
Hmm. Okay.
So to answer your question, it depends. And that's a very attorney answer. I know, but it's for healthcare providers, that's the safe answer, because ultimately your definition of what is a kickback isn't the one that matters.
Seems kind of complicated if you're going to be accepting when you're deciding if you're going to accept a breakfast of bagels and cream cheese or something from a
yes.
vendor.
it is very complicated, and it's essentially the best answer, the best advice for providers is to just refuse any sort of payment. I know that may not make office staff happy because office staff enjoys donuts, they enjoy sandwiches, whatever the vendor brings in. But just to be safe, it's better to say no.
Right, better safe than sorry. Right.
Yes. Especially considering the fines we talked about, and I glossed over the anti-kickback penalties, and they're pretty serious. The anti-kickback statute says that you may face penalties, and this again is 2016 figures. You may face penalties of up to $73,586 per kickback, and then treble damages. So if you get in a situation where you have say you were provided a $50 lunch for or $50 cash per patient you refer, is that $50 really worth $73,000? So that's another way to look at it.
So then what happens when you have a childhood friend that's a specialty and you refer patients to her, but then what if you're giving gifts to her but it's as a friend? Like, that's a fine line. So how do you define those lines between friendship and business?
That's a very complicated question, and how you would phrase it essentially, in my opinion, and it should be noted that for those out there, this is a discussion. This is obviously not legal advice to anyone out there doing this, but it's you the intent of the gift, the intent of the payment is really matters here, because it's the anti-kickback statute, if you remember, it says prohibits the knowing and willful solicitation for getting patients. So the gift you give your friend, that isn't for the knowing and willful solicitation of getting a patient. It's the reason you're doing this is you have your childhood friends. You grew up together. You've lived down the street, et cetera, et cetera. It's not for the solicitation of patients. Now, if you had a childhood friend, and we go back to the example I said earlier where you refer me 5 patients in a month and I'll get you a new watch, yes, that would be a kickback. But Christmas gifts that are given just because you are friends, in my opinion, would not be a kickback.
Okay. So maybe holding on to that card where you said, Denise, it's always been lovely being your friend, and I hope you have a lovely birthday, that kind of thing.
Right. Yes. Holding on to the card, and also, it wouldn't hurt to document the relationship, saying that you friends, you've known this person, because if an investigation occurs, then you can produce the document, produce file, and say, here's our relationship, here's what we've done. So but here's one thing to think about. It's not going to be a kickback if, say, you're a dentist and your friend is a primary care physician and you don't refer patients to each other. You can give all the gifts you want. You're not referring patients to each other. The only time this comes into play is whenever your friends you're giving gifts and you're referring patients. So need to make sure you're aware of that. If there's no referring going on, then you're fine.
Oh, interesting. Okay. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to First Talk Compliance, and my guest today is Trey Scott, attorney at Kennedy Attorneys and Counselors at Law. So this is very interesting. So do we have any exceptions to this?
Yes, we do. As I mentioned, there are safe harbors to the anti-kickback, and safe harbors, essentially that means that it's safe, it's okay to do this. And these were established by the Secretary of Health and Human Services, and essentially safe harbors are investment interest, space rental, equipment rental, the sale of a practice, referral services, which obviously a referral service would be you have a service that contacts and provides patients, warranties, discounts, group purchasing organizations. There's a lot of safe harbors, and you can find those essentially by going to your browser and googling safe harbors. As far as the False Claims Act, there is an exception to it somewhat. There's a provision in the statute that says the provider or supplier that is responsible for a violation of the False Claims Act provides to the appropriate officials all information known about the false claims within 30 days of data discovery, and the provider or supplier continues to fully cooperate with any investigation, and no criminal, civil, or administrative actions have taken place with respect to the false claim, the court may lower the amount owed to the government. So essentially, this is where compliance programs within your organization are very important. Because if you have compliance programs within your organization and you find out that you knowingly submitted a false claim, then you immediately need to report it within 30 days of the data discovery, and you would cooperate with any investigation. Then when sentencing occurs, the court would essentially reduce the amount owed from 3 times the amount of damages to 2 times the amount of damages. So that is a saving, and it is a provision within the statute that allows that. So again, compliance programs like those offered by First Healthcare are important. Mm-hmm. And then there are general exceptions to Stark Law as well for physician services, in-office ancillary services, prepaid plans, or other permissible exceptions. So there are exceptions to Stark Law as well. My recommendation, and I'm going back to the advisory opinion, if you're wondering if you may have a safe harbor or you want to establish a safe harbor, again, ask for an advisory opinion on it, or potentially research previous advisory opinions to see if the OIG has stated something about that in the past.
What do you recommend providers do regarding these exceptions, as in whether they meet the exceptions?
That would be getting an advisory opinion from the OIG.
Okay, got it. Do you have any more advice for us or closing thoughts on these matters?
Well, as far as closing remarks, remember that it's important to know that your definition of a kickback, that's or a violation of Stark Law or a false claim, that's, while important, and it's important to establish compliance programs that identify those, the ultimate decision, the ultimate determination is with is with the Department of Justice and OIG. Like the song says, you don't, or the song I mentioned earlier, you may think you're okay. You may think that everything is going fine, but the ultimate decision is with the Department of Justice and the OIG. So definitely be on your toes and seek advisory opinions from the Office of Inspector General, but really before you set up anything, it'll come in handy in the long run. It is somewhat of a lengthy process, so I can understand the frustration with a delay, but it can be a lifesaver. It can end up saving, in some of these cases, it can end up saving millions of dollars, because in 2012, Walgreens got involved in a pretty high profile anti-kickback case because they were, even though they admitted no wrongdoing, and settled for $7.9 million, they were giving Medicare and Medicaid beneficiaries gift cards to, I believe, Walgreens or maybe some other stores for transferring their prescriptions from elsewhere to Walgreens. Had Walgreens sought an advisory opinion from the Office of Inspector General, they may not have had to fork out $7.9 million. So definitely seek advisory opinions. That's what I would say in my closing remarks.
Good advice. Okay, well, thank you so much, Trey, for joining us here. Really appreciate it. Some great advice and a really wonderful conversation. Appreciate it.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for our audience for tuning in to First Talk Compliance. And you can learn more about our show on the programs page on healthcarenowradio.com. And lend your voice to the conversation on Twitter at FirstHCC or hashtag FirstTalkCompliance. You can also email me at KatherineShort@FirstHCC.com. I'm Katherine Short of First Healthcare Compliance. And remember, compliance is the key to achieving peace of mind.